From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. It's been 2 months since Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration blocked a recall campaign after backers filed around 46,000 signatures. Now, that ruling is being challenged in court. The next hearing is tomorrow in Anchorage Superior Court. Both sides have been busy filing motions. KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman spoke with Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes about what's next.
So, can you briefly catch us up on how we got here?
Sure. The recall application was filed in September. It listed four grounds for recall. They ranged from how quickly the governor had filled a judicial vacancy to a veto over funding for the court system in which the governor cited court rulings related to abortion. Those are just two of the grounds. The State Division of Elections rejected the application. It cited Attorney General Kevin Clarkson's opinion that the recall application had failed to show that the governor committed neglect of duty and that mere procedural or tactical failures are not enough to meet the grounds for recall. The lawsuit was filed in early November, and it has been assigned to Anchorage Superior Court Judge Eric Arseth. Recall Dunleavy says the recall was drawn up with both state and federal law in mind. In its filings, it's provided more detail on each of the grounds for recall.
Okay. So what does the Dunleavy administration say about all this?
Well, first, in its filings, it says that Recall Dunleavy failed to meet the requirements of the recall statute, which says that you have to lay out in no more than 200 words the particulars of what's being alleged as the grounds for recall. And they're saying that those 200 words just don't add up to what's needed under state law. Both the administration and another group, which is Stand Tall with Mike, which has joined the lawsuit, filed motions to strike much of the information in Recall Dunleavy's filings because the court must limit its review to the exact words that are used in the recall application. It says that the largest of the Recall Dunleavy court filings is little more than a political manifesto.
Okay. What's the latest since the last movement on this case in November?
Both sides have been going back and forth with more filings responding to each other's arguments. Recall Dunleavy in its latest filing says the courts can look at both the written statements from the governor's office and other material that provides context, not just the 200 words in the recall application, as it considers this issue of whether the application met the grounds for recall. It cites court precedent that basically says that courts should interpret the recall law liberally. The administration says the case turns on whether the recall grounds can refer to other documents. Also, whether the grounds for recall are only a notice to the targeted official or whether they're supposed to allow for the state and the courts and the voters to decide. And whether the definitions used by Recall Dunleavy for the grounds are consistent with Alaska's system. Aside from those arguments, there's another filing supporting the governor that notes that the website recalldunleavy.org was registered 5 days after the governor introduced his amended budget last year. That's months and months before the recall actually happened, basically suggesting that it was political. We'll see Friday what the two sides focus on in court.
All right. Well, Andrew, thank you for your reporting and thanks for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Supporters of a ballot initiative that could fundamentally change how Alaska holds its elections submitted tens of thousands of signatures to officials in Anchorage today. The ballot measure, organized by the group Alaskans for Better Elections, was required to gather a little more than 28,000 signatures. Instead, the campaign says it has over 41,000 from residents spread all over the state. Once again, Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports.
It's about 5 below in the middle of the day as Alaskans for Better Elections' Jason Gren and other campaign members unload cardboard boxes full of signature books from Anchorage, Fairbanks, the Northwest Arctic Borough, Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, Sitka.
Signatures from every district, all 40. We need a certain amount from the 30 of the 40, and we've done that. And then once you get to that level, you know, we had some time, had people who were still out field and decided, you know, let's just keep doing it until we can't anymore.
They pile box after box onto handcarts before slowly wheeling them inside to plop on the desk of election officials for certification.
Keep handing them up.
All right.
The ballot initiative has three aims. The first would increase reporting requirements for political groups spending money to influence elections. The second measure would open up primary elections, allowing unregistered or independent voters to have a say picking party candidates ahead of general elections. The last provision would move Alaska to a ranked-choice voting system. If it passes, Alaska would be at the cutting edge of election reform efforts happening in states across the country. Initiative co-chair Jason Gren, a former independent member of the State House, says in the months ahead, the campaign will focus on education and outreach.
Talking to stakeholders, talking with different community leaders, talking to the public, informing them what all of this does, what it doesn't do, you know, myth-busting, presenting our side of the benefits, you know, everything that you do in a campaign. For us, this is the next step as we pivot into talking to the public about why this is beneficial to the voters of Alaska.
Election officials have 60 days to certify that organizers met the threshold of support necessary to put the measure on the November ballot. Carol Thompson manages operations for state election work in Anchorage and says pretty much every year her office hires temporary workers to help verify voter signatures.
Easter famine.
The initiative stalled when officials in the Dunleavy administration said that it was ineligible under state law because it violated the requirement that ballot items stick to a single issue. But a Superior Court judge disagreed and in October cleared the initiative to move forward. According to the campaign, the top three contributors to Alaskans for Better Elections are political organizations from outside states, Colorado, Texas, and Massachusetts. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The Army Corps of Engineers has announced a $611 million expansion plan for the Port of Nome that will allow visits from larger ships. The Alaska Journal of Commerce reports the plan will allow the port to accommodate larger tankers and cruise ships. Officials say the primary benefit to residents of Nome and outlying communities would be potentially lower-cost goods brought by the larger vessels. Officials say the plan builds on a $210 million proposal from 2015 to expand Nome's protected water area and dredge for larger ships. A U.S. Coast Guard antenna technician convicted of murdering two co-workers in 2012 at a Kodiak communication station has been sentenced to life in prison. 68-year-old James Wells was convicted in October of killing electricians mate First Class James Hopkins and Richard Belisle, a civilian. Prosecutors say Wells resented their growing influence in the shop. Wells maintains his innocence. Last year, U.S. Attorney General William Barr declared a public law enforcement emergency for rural Alaska after his visit to the state. Alaska lawmakers then formed a working group to fix the Village Public Safety Officer Program, a key state service which has battled budget cuts, high turnover, and an evolving job description. Now, the working group has come up with nine recommendations they think will fix the program. KYUK's Christy Schellenberger has the story.
First on the list is to revise the state statute that details what the Village Public Safety Officer program is supposed to do. Representative Chuck Kopp, a Republican from Anchorage, is one of the co-chairs of the working group.
And it had a much less of an emphasis on law enforcement, you know, keeping the law, you know, apprehending violators and keeping people safe. But then the program kind of just dramatically evolved.
And he says that evolution is not reflected in the state statute. Revising it will also make it easier to fix other problems in the VPSO program, like the funding and the lack of flexibility for VPSOs to cover other communities, in addition to the ones they are assigned. Kopp says it will also help with high turnover rates.
The way the program is structured, there is no really flexibility for the people that actually are the boots on the ground.
VPSOs are usually the only law enforcement in a remote community and are first to act during an emergency. It can take hours, days even, for an Alaska State Trooper to get to a community, usually because of weather. But there are less than 40 VPSOs covering the entire state of Alaska, leaving many communities without any kind of law enforcement. Since August, the working group has held eight meetings, usually listening sessions around the state to gather feedback on how to fix the problem, including the one in Anchorage this week. Another goal is to create more flexibility with funding for the nine nonprofits and one bureau that oversee VPSO programs throughout the state. The working group also wants to establish a formal government-to-government consultation process at the state level that would make sure tribes are consulted before any changes are made to training or regulation. The Alaska Department of Public Safety will continue to advise and train VPSOs. Senator Donnie Olson, a Democrat from Nome, is also a co-chair of the working group. He hopes that this time, with this list of recommendations, the solutions will be permanent.
In the next 5 to 10 years, I don't want to hear these same issues coming back at me again, and I plan on being here.
The working group hopes to finalize the recommendations by the end of the month, and COP says they will focus on revising the statute during the 2020 legislative session. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
Officials say Alaska's population has dipped to its lowest level since 2012 because of a falling birth rate and a decrease in the number of new arrivals to the state. Anchorage Daily News reported the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development says the state had 731,007 residents as of July 1st, 2019. Officials say the figure is a decrease of 3,048 residents from the same date in 2018. The State Department of Labor estimates population changes between July 1st and June 30th each year and makes the results public in January. Former Alaska Governor Bill Walker has been chosen as one of six resident fellows for a program at the Institute of Politics at Harvard Kennedy School. According to the Institute, the fellows will live on the Massachusetts campus for the spring semester, mentor students, and lead an eight-week not-for-credit study group. Walker left office in late 2018. He says he expects to discuss running and governing as an independent. And finally, the National Weather Service has changed its high wind watch to a high wind warning for the Juneau area. Specifically, this affects Douglas, downtown Juneau, West Juneau, and Thane. That warning is in effect from 6 p.m. this evening until midnight Friday night. Taku winds, northeast winds 30 miles per hour with gusts up to 80 miles per hour are expected. Peak gusts will occur Friday morning and Friday afternoon before easing Friday evening. Blowing snow could cause low visibility. Power outages are possible. Travel will be difficult, especially for high-profile vehicles. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Thursday, January 9th, 2020. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.